Welcome, welcome everyone to the debut episode of a brand new show called This Woman Works. Now, for those that aren't aware or haven't seen any of the advertisement or things I've talked about in regards to this show coming to you, basically this show is going to be about elevating, appreciating, and showing love to Black women. I'm going to do this show once a week. I'm going to have a guest, of course, every week because I'm not a woman, but definitely going to bring on some great people, some great women, and some inspiring women as well. And of course, the first episode, I wanted to bring on someone that definitely does a lot of things, definitely is very creative, very passionate about what she does, and is very much a businesswoman. That would be Ashley Autumn. What's going on?
What's up, Mike? Thanks for having me.
Yes, of course, of course. You know, I brought you on the other show, but of course I had to bring you on this show, obviously. We're going to get into, you know, kind of growing up for you and how that was, and of course get into kind of your introduction into the business. But before we do all of that, of course, for last month and, you know, the March shows at Black Girl Magic Moment, I kind of want to continue that, but I wanted to bring it over to this show. So for this show, I want to talk about, you know, the Black Girl Magic Moment. It's going to be a little bit involving sports. Of course, everyone, a lot of people watched the SU Iowa basketball game, women's basketball game, 12.3 million viewers, which is huge, huge for the women's game. And if you're not watching the women's game, you're totally missing out on some great basketball. But, you know, of course, within that, you have people saying that, in particular, Caitlin Clark is the greatest player of all time and things like that. And I'm now not taking anything away from Caitlin Clark, which I know she's a great basketball player. Definitely not taking anything away. I don't think she's my GOAT, but hey, choose what you like. But while everyone's talking about who their GOAT is and all those different things and talking about great basketball players, I think one particular woman was missing. That'd be Miss Shamiqua Holmesclaw. Now, for those that aren't aware, Shamiqua Holmesclaw was a bad woman on the court. Now, she went to Tennessee from 1995 to 1999. She was a 6'2" forward. Now, at that time, that was a little bit different to see a 6'2" forward handling the basketball, shooting fadeaway jump shots, all those different things. It was a little bit different at that time. So she definitely broke the mold with the things that she would do on the court. Of course, she was a four-time Kodak All-American, one of only six ever to do that. That includes, of course, Cheryl Miller being one of the other people that was able to do that. And Lynette Ware, for those that remember that name, Kansas. Of course, she finished her career with 3,025 points and 1,295 rebounds, which makes her, I would say, the actually all-time leading rebounder and scorer at the University of Tennessee, men or women, by the way. She also 470 points, 197 rebounds for her NCAA women's college basketball career, which put her at the time of when she left, of course, college basketball, put her at the number one spot for both of those, basically. Of course, 1998 and 1999, she was the player of the year. She basically swept all those awards in 1998 and 1999. She was 131-17 in her career at University of Tennessee. But of course, you know, she went on from there. Of course, I do have to mention as well, 1997 and 1998, she went 39-0. It was her, Tamika Catchings, and Samika Randall, the three Meeks. They went 39-0 en route to winning a national title, which that was awesome. And then her sophomore year, of course, they lost 10 games that year going to the tournament, weren't picked by many to even win the NCAA tournament. And yet they went on and won the NCAA tournament behind Shamiqua Holmesclaw. So she did win three titles while she was there. Of course, she did go on to be the number one pick and ended up being the Washington Mystics. Played for the Mystics, LA Sparks, retired in 2007, came back and played for the Atlanta Dream 2009, and then the San Antonio the Silver Stars, I believe it was at that time, 2010. And, of course, she was a six-time All-Star in the WNBA. But you know, while everyone's throwing shine to this person, that person, the other, I had to bring it on home to Tennessee, University of Tennessee, Shamequa Holdsclaw. She is the Black Girl Magic moment for this debut episode. Now, Ashley, I know you remember Shamequa Holdsclaw. What did you have any thoughts you wanted to throw on that one?
GBO. I grew up on Shamequa Holdsclaw in the three meets. That was like my middle school years, and I actually played middle school basketball. So at that time, it was like, I'm going to go to Tennessee, and I'm going to, like, do all of that. So that's a very impressive resume. Some of that stuff I didn't even know myself. But to me, she is, because she just went to Tennessee, like, that makes her my GOAT, just period. That's no shade to Caitlin Clark. I love what Caitlin Clark is doing. I love what she's doing for the game. But I'm going to go with Meek. And I'm also an Angel Reese fan, so not that I'm putting Angel Reese over Shamequa Holdsclaw, but yeah, GBO, B4L.
There you go. For those who don't know, GBO, that's Go Big Orange, and V4L is Ball for Life. So, you know, you can let me educate you if you don't know. So, yeah, there we go. But speaking of educating, so we don't know, we want to learn about you, Ashley. So let's talk about young Ashley growing up in Chattanooga. How was that?
I mean, it was what it was. So Chattanooga, for people who don't know, it's a small town in Tennessee. It's not like backwoods, but it's like, I guess, a medium city, small, medium city. And there wasn't a whole lot to do. Like, you had to learn how to make your fun. And of course, it was just a different time. We didn't have like Facebook and Instagram and things like that. So a lot of my friends, like, we went bowling, parking lot pimping was our thing. So we just go to the park, hang out, going to the movies, those type of things. I'm a preacher's kid. So I wouldn't say that I grew up sheltered, but I definitely had a lot more parameters around what I could and couldn't do than some of my other peers did. That did not necessarily stop me from getting in trouble. But those parameters were there. So yeah, it's just, we would have small town fun, just what I consider country girl fun.
Okay, so can you kind of describe me what the vibe was kind of growing up there? Because, you know, Chattanooga, I'm in Nashville, by the way, for those that aren't aware. So, you know, Nashville and Chattanooga are definitely two totally different cities. So can you kind of describe what the vibe was around growing up in Chattanooga at that point in time?
So, see, I personally don't think Nashville and Chattanooga are two totally different cities. I think Chattanooga is like a smaller version of Nashville. I think what makes it unique is it sits like 2 hours from Nashville and 2 hours from Atlanta. So you get the culture from both cities. And because Atlanta is like, of course, super Black, a lot of what we did was that Atlanta influence. So growing up, like, if you wanted to have like big city type fun, you would go to Six Flags over Atlanta. You would go to like the King Center and those things. So it's just, it's a balance. So it's like, it's got the country feel of Nashville, but it also has slightly some of that like Atlanta feel, or at least it tries to. Like, people go to Atlanta and bring back the Atlanta culture, the fashion, the music. So typically whatever was coming out of Atlanta musically, it's probably gonna get to Chattanooga first. You know, of course there's some stops in between, but those are like small towns. But a lot of like the bigger Atlanta artists, they would come to Chattanooga first before they blew up and do like their shows in Chattanooga. So yeah, the vibe is country. Like, it has its racial undertones, but it's one of those things, like, if you're from there, you know how to navigate it, you know how to deal with it. And it's a beautiful city. Like, if people have never been there, it's one of the most beautiful cities, in my opinion, because you have the mountains and it's in the valley. So yeah, it's just small town vibes, blue collar vibes. Most of the people that live in Chattanooga, because it's on a river, there's like a lot of the industrial industrial companies there. So a lot of people get into that. You have like Volkswagen is there. So the people are hardworking. You work hard, you play hard. So, you know, a lot of people are going to work hard Monday through Friday. The weekend hits, they're going to make sure they have a good time before it's time to go back to work on Monday. So a lot of who I am and what I do is influenced just on that, like the hard work and things like that. It's just, that's the vibe of the city.
Okay, so growing up in Chattanooga, you did say the music and music would come from Atlanta to Chattanooga before, you know, taken out to the big time. So with that being said, and with the different things that you mentioned about Chattanooga, what were some of the things you originally wanted to be?
So I really always wanted to be in, like, a music executive, a record executive, a A&R. I'd say when I was like really little, you know, in kindergarten, it's like, what do you want to be when you grow up? As if people really know. And I guess some people haven't figured out at that point, but I would be like, oh, I want to be a doctor. And then at one point I wanted to be like a car engineer and design cars. That was real short lived. But like in seventh grade, I bought my first CD from a yard sale. It ended up being a 2-for-1. So it was supposed to be like a Brandy CD. And then when I opened it, they had a Boyz II Men CD in there as well. And I used to read the liner notes of that Brandy album, Brandy's first album, like every day. So I just put the music in and I would just read the liner notes. I wanted to know what everybody's job was, what they did. The internet really hadn't popped off yet. We still had dial up, but every now and then when you could get on there and really get going, I would like research what some of those jobs were. I would go on to like the sites of the labels and see what kind of college internships they had, what kind of jobs they had open. And this was all in middle school. So I've always wanted to be in the music industry, dabbled in that like independently with friends from the city and things like that. But yeah, I've always wanted to do this.
All right. Okay. So we're going to get into a little bit more about, you know, wanting to be in the music business and kind of how you got into it and all those different things. But first, we're going to take a quick commercial break on This Woman Works with your host, Mike Patton.
EDO Beard Butter and EDO Beard Washers are the best beard grooming products for men worldwide. They help promote growth, keep your beard moisturized and soft, and enhance your overall upkeep of your facial hair. And with the new promo code MPASC10, you can get 10% off of these products. Just go to www.etsy.com/shop/EBO beard butter. Again, that's www.etsy.com/shop/EBO beard butter. And again, the promo code MPASC10. Again, MPASC10, where you can get 10% off any products except for beard boxes. So treat your beard better today by going to get these EBO, the EBO Beard Butter and EBO Beard Wash.
All right, and we're back. A little bit of technical difficulties there, but hey, you know, as long as y'all got it, it was EBO Beard Butter is one of our sponsors, of course, for not only this show, but for Touring, of course, 10% off of everything. But beard boxes with the promo code MPASC10. Now, I know this is a show called This Woman Works, and I understand that there are not women out here with beards. Of course, there may be. But what I will say is that, of course, you know, you could, you know, take these boxes and purchase them for somebody in your family, or these products, I should say, purchase for somebody in your family, or maybe for your significant other. Who knows? But hey, 10% off is for me to you. Thank you. But coming back to the show, of course, wanted to get into kind of how you got into the business and how that happened. Of course, you did mention that you kind of your feel for the entertainment industry kind of happened with your first CD and kind of, you know, when you were in middle school wanting to be a record exec or A&R. So when did you kind of first get into the entertainment and music industry?
Like professionally or just like dabbling?
Just dabbling.
So I'd say maybe like late teens, like my senior year, freshman year of college. I'd say like more of like my freshman year of college coming back home that summer. That was like right when, maybe a little bit later to be honestly, but like that's when Fruity Loops and all of that stuff kind of kicked off. So it was a lot easier for people to be like the at-home producer. The inboxes came out so you could record at home and things like that. So I knew people who were getting that equipment and we would hang out and a lot of those guys would just rap and I would be like the only woman in the room sometimes, most of the time, that just really understood the music. And I'd say that made me tough. I used to run with a crew called 100 ENT. And a lot of those guys are from Nashville, but they went to school at UTC. But we all ended up, I don't really remember how we all ended up like getting together. I think we had like a mutual Chattanooga connection. And we would just do music together. We ended up like putting out a mixtape back in the day. And that was around the time where like indie labels really popped. So you had like Rockefeller, you had Murder Inc., you had your Bad Boys, you had all of those things. So everybody kind of had like a clique or a label anyways. And so that was just our thing. And then, you know, you get older, people start going their own different ways. They graduate college, get married, have kids, and you can't necessarily get together like you did when you were like 20, 21. But I kind of kept dabbling in it, did some management. And at one point I was like, no, management is not for me. It is not my favorite thing to do. Because it's like it can be just a fancy word for babysitter. And I don't really feel like artists should need all of the hand holding that they get sometimes. Like if this is your career, so if you want it to work, then you need to put in the work. Nobody's gonna sit and just give you anything. And if they do, it probably has something attached to it that you're gonna have to pay for eventually anyway. So.
Got you, okay. So of course, during that time, I know Talented 10th had to kind of come about at some point. So kind of how did the idea for Talented 10th come about for you?
So I was actually managing somebody and they just weren't putting in work. I'm not going to say no names, but they were not putting in work. And so I quit music altogether. I told my friend, who's my best friend and producer that partners with me on pretty much every project that I do. I was like, I quit. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm just going to be a regular person, do regular people work and stop chasing this dream. And he's like, you'll be back. You're too good, too smart, you'll be back. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about, I'm done. Like, I was just really frustrated. And then I eventually ended up dating a guy who had a show. He promoted a show and there was a young lady there that sang. And I was like, man, she's really good. And then I crossed paths with her again through him. And I asked who she was working with and she was like, nobody. And I sent some of her demos to my friend in Atlanta and to another friend of mine in Nashville. One's a videographer, the other's a producer. And they both were like, oh, we'll work with her for free. And I was like the middle person. Nobody knew the other person. So that kind of forced me back in it just a little bit because it's like, you don't really get free production, video or music very often, and especially very high quality. Like it was very high quality production from these people. So I was like, fine, I'll kind of facilitate it. And some of the same woes of management kind of came into the picture, but we did well enough that I started making a lot of connections. And I even started doing my own events to promote that artist and to pay some bills at the same time, to be quite honest. It's just like, I'm gonna have a basement party, but this is just like a makeshift rent party to help pay bills. It didn't pay bills like I wanted it to pay bills, but again, I made like different connections with different people. And so when that artist decided to do something different, I still had all of these connections. And so I was like, well, if nothing else, I can keep doing events. So I kept doing events, and I would just work with different artists. Like, I would have an event, promote that artist. And I went through several different name changes. Like, I didn't want to use my name. I felt like it was like super vain just to be like Ashley Autumn Presents. There's nothing wrong with it, but I was just like, that just doesn't feel right. I can't remember what the other thing was, the name that I used. But as I really kept doing it, I was like, I want a name that has meaning. I want it to have like a polished thing, name that people will be proud of, but it's an easy sale. Like, typically when we hear of indie labels, we hear like Cocaine Music or Murder Inc. And it's like, I mean, I didn't want that type of stigma, but I didn't necessarily want it to be like super duper feminine either. I wanted it to be like a gender neutral thing that anybody could align themselves with and take pride in. And at the time I was in Nashville. And so I played around with like different names in my head, and Talented 10th came about. And it just, for me, it made sense because W.E. Du Bois made that name, made the Talented 10th, the name Talented 10th popular with one of his writings. And he went to Fisk. And I was like, oh, okay, he went to Fisk. And one of the guys who supported his work was, I can't think of the guy's name, but he was one of the contributors of Morehouse, founders of Morehouse. And the other person was John D. Rockefeller. And I'm a big fan of what Rockefeller Records did and how they put their label together. And it was super independent. And they pretty much did everything in house. So I was like, man, I could just kind of be like the evolved version of Rockefeller, where I'm not necessarily using the Rockefeller name. Like, that's not my family name, but I could use like the Talented 10th moniker just to kind of show like, okay, we take pride in what we do, and we do it with excellence. So that's how Talented 10th came about.
Okay. All right. All right. So, I mean, if you would like, can you kind of tell us who one of your first clients were that kind of actually you invested in, or I would say you kind of picked up along the way? If not, that's okay.
Well, and there's, like I said, we ran in a clique. So like with 100 ENT, there was Lucky, there was Barry, I know I'm getting some names, and that's why I was just like, I shouldn't. But yeah, like KB was one of the executives. Wes was one of the executives. So again, there's like a whole clique of us that just ran together. There's like two other people I know. I know for a fact I'm forgetting their names, and I'm drawing a blank. But like, I'd say that I would shout them out before I would shout a lot of people out.
Okay. All right. And so, for those that aren't aware about Talented 10th, and you know, maybe coming into it for the first time, what all does Talented 10th do in terms of just for artists or entertainment in general as a company?
We do some management. I do try to stay away from management because it's not my favorite thing to do. To me, to be a successful manager, you're pretty much putting like your whole life on the back burner to invest in the artist, and it gets difficult to manage multiple artists if you don't have like a significant budget or a decent sized team to take on some of those roles. But we do production, so we do music production, we do film production. I do some consulting, so if there's independent artists out there that need help where it's like, I can't manage you, you can still book consultations, and I can help either with like coming up with marketing strategy or just helping you set up the basics of like, this is what your PRO is, performing rights organization. You need to sign up for this to get paid. These are the different ways to get paid as an artist, things like that. So we do a lot just because everything is in-house. I prefer to do everything in-house. That way I'm not necessarily giving a whole lot of money away. As an independent artist, and then you have more control of what you're doing when you do everything else.
Okay. All right. All right. So definitely sounds like a one-stop shop to get it right, basically.
Yeah. It's a one-stop shop. I kind of model it after like Motown. So just that assembly line. Motown was really big on artist development and making sure their artists were prepared for each level of success that they would encounter. And so it's the same thing, like making sure that if you have a show that the conditioning is right. So we get out there and we train like athletes to get ready for shows, especially major shows. Then getting with vocal coaches to make sure the vocals getting stronger and make sure that whatever it is. So things that like people don't necessarily see behind the scenes, we do all of that. But it's again, to make sure that the artist is prepared for each level. So now we don't do artist development. Well, the industry doesn't do artist development. And so what happens is people go viral and they're not prepared for that viral moment. So now it's kind of like on the job training. So they're developing in real time. So we're seeing all of the flaws in these artists before they actually are ready for like some of the stages they get on, like a Rolling Loud. So you go viral and then 2 months you're at Rolling Loud, where in the 90s, a person is developing for like 2 or 3 years and then they're on at Rolling Loud. And they're giving you a very polished show. So a lot of times when you hear people complaining about things in the music industry, it's just because the artist development isn't there. And it's like an athlete. Like if an athlete isn't training and developing, and then you say, okay, play in the Super Bowl, you can expect for them to just crash and burn unless they're like a one in a million type athlete that can go out there and just do it on the fly.
Okay. All right. So definitely learned a lot about Talented 10th, the kind of the inspiration and the uniqueness of Talented 10th. But I want to ask you a little bit more about what it is to be a Black woman that's a CEO of her own entertainment company. And of course, tips and things like that. We're going to get into that, though. But first, we do have to take a quick commercial break on This One Works with your host, Mike Padden, of course, with my guest, Ashley Autumn.
A shift. A shift is something that happens and changes the dynamics. And that's what happened when Garrett Logistics was born. After 10 years as a sales pro in the logistics world of sporting goods, John Garrett decided to pivot to the world of freight and start a brokerage. So you're saying to yourself, why trust Garrett Logistics? Well, Garrett Logistics helps shippers improve overall workflow, along with increased on-time pickup and delivery percentages. Last-minute loads, multi-drop pickups, and more are part of the services with Garrett Logistics. They're available Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday, 8 a.m. to 12 p.m., all times Central Standard Time. So give them a ring at 615-400-8484. That's 615-400-8484, or you can email them at john@garrettlogistics.co or visit their website at garrettlogistics.co. Garrett Logistics, where the motto is, it's not just freight to us, it's your business.
All right, and we are back on touring the ASC South. Good gracious. We're back on This Woman Works. Oh, good gracious. Getting tongue-tied already. Ashley, I knew it was going to happen one time.
Hey, it's the first one, so you gotta work out the kinks. It's all right.
I can't hear you. I don't know what's going on now.
A shift.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I cannot hear you for some reason. I do not know what's going on here. Well, we're having a little technical difficulties here, everyone. Ashley, if you would kind of step out of the room and then come back, maybe that'll take care of it real quick. Of course.
Is this any better?
I can't hear you.
Okay. I can leave and come back. I don't know.
Let's see. And again, I apologize, folks. We're having a little technical difficulty going on here.
Can you hear me now?
Go. My apologies, everyone. Just a little technical difficulties. Hey, it happens. You know, we're all human. We all do have, of course, the internet, and the internet sometimes wants to be funny. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I cannot hear you. I don't know what is going on. I tell you what, let's see. I am not sure what is going on with our internet tonight, everyone. Here we go. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
I just can't hear you. I don't know what is going on. Okay, give me 1 second. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I can't hear you. I'm going to step right out and come back in. Give me 1 second. I'm going to step right out and come back in. All right. Say something.
Can you hear me now?
I can't hear you. I'm going to leave the studio and come back. Give me 1 sec. Stay in the studio. All right. Can you can say something, Ashley?
Can you hear me?
Yep. There we go. Now we got it worked out. Sorry about that, folks. Had a little technical difficulty there, but we're back on Torn Ahead. We're back on This Woman's Work. This Woman Works with Ashley Autumn, CEO of Talented 10th. When we went to commercial break, before we had a little bit of the technical difficulty and the craziness that just happened here, we were talking about, of course, how important it is for, you know, you're a boss, pretty much. You're a boss. That is what it is. You are a boss. So how important was it for you to be the boss and to be kind of running your own show and doing your own thing your way? How important was that to you?
I don't necessarily think it was like important. It just felt like all of the right things aligned and then it made sense. Now, since I've been doing my own thing, I honestly prefer being a boss. It just like, yeah, I like have my own freedom to do whatever, whenever. Like I said, there's more freedom and more control in being independent, where if you're with a label, especially a major label, then a lot of that freedom starts to go out the window. So I just feel like for me, the important thing was being able to position myself where I can help artists take control of their career. So having the ability to help develop an artist and then giving them the keys to drive their own vehicle and start making their own decisions for their career, and what makes sense to them. So for me personally, I look, like I said, we train like athletes. So to work with me, you have to have that mentality. Like, I won't work with a person who's like, I just make music for the fun or I just make music for myself. Like, I like the competitiveness of the music industry or just the entertainment industry. And there's a lot of politics that go along with it, but just the idea of like there being a Billboard chart and being able to put together a marketing plan to see how far you can get on that Billboard chart with the aspirations of going number one. Like, that to me is what appeals to me about the industry. And some of it is just because growing up, I was an athlete. We talked about Chattanooga. There's nothing to do but play sports. So most people in Chattanooga has played some type of sport or have done some type of activity. So bringing that element into a creative space is just what I love to do. And then being a boss just ended up being the cherry on top.
Okay. All right. So do you have any kind of tips or anything like that for anyone that may be interested in entertainment industry or, you know, music industry and kind of getting involved in it or trying to start something of their own?
I would say just do it. The first one is going to suck. Like, if I showed the first mixtape that I was a part of, like, the music quality sucked. The first graphics I've ever designed on my own for a flyer sucked. Like, going back, looking at it now, it's like, these were just terrible. But you have to put it out and allow yourself to just get better and look at what other people are doing and get that inspiration. Like, you don't have to carbon copy it or be a copycat, but I see things that people do, especially on larger scales. So I might see something that Beyonce does and it's like, I want to do that my way. How do I mimic that? If I'm doing graphics, I look at things like ESPN, SportsCenter, Breakfast Club, and it's like, okay, these are how they're doing their social graphics. And then I might get in Canva and I just start playing with things until I can emulate what they did. And so that just helps me become better at it. I don't necessarily think people have to go to school for those things. Of course you can, but it's gonna be different in the real world. Like, what they can't teach you in school is that everybody's not your friend. So you have to watch out for sharks. And they're not going to tell you that it's very political and that you have to navigate and move in certain ways with certain people. So that would be my advice, is just get started and learn as you go and be able to measure your growth. So you should be able to look back each year and see growth. Like, okay, this is where I started. I ended the year. This is my growth. If you're not seeing growth each year, then you either need to get with someone who can help you grow or maybe rethink what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Okay, there we go. And last but certainly not least, what was the biggest lesson you've learned over time in the industry?
You cannot work with everybody. Like, I think going into it, because I would consider myself a kind person that just wants to help people. And I really do what I do because I like helping the artists. Like, I educate the artists on how to be a good business person. So I'm not controlling all of their money. They know the public. Like, if an artist decides, I don't want to work with you anymore, when they work with someone else, if they actually listen and they pay attention to what I've been trying to teach them, they should be able to go work with anyone. But what I had to learn was, like, I have a very unique skill set and I'm very gifted in that unique skill set. And not everybody respects that or has the best intention. So a lot of times I was collaborating with people who didn't have the best intentions. And now, especially in today's society, everybody's like, oh, we got to work together. We got to work together. We got to collaborate together. And if we all just work together as one, we could be so much further. And that sounds good on paper, but in theory, I don't necessarily agree with that anymore. I think you have to find your tribe and you have to work with your tribe. You're not going to like everybody. You're not going to want to work with everybody. Every connection is not a good connection. Some people are going to try to use your connections to get a leg up. And that's okay. If they do that and they get away with it, it's only going to be temporary, because God knows that, you know, they're not going to get too much further if they had to take advantage of you to get there. So I'd say just the biggest lesson for me is knowing that I am capable of doing these things without necessarily needing to reach out to people or needing the crutch of another person to help me get there. I can do it on my own with a sufficient team.
Okay. And you definitely have a supporter in what you just said. We have a message in the this woman works inbox from Team NBS Media, said, preach, everyone can't go.
Yeah,
definitely. That is the truth. Everyone can't go. Yeah. Somebody got to sit on the sidelines.
Try to take them, like, my thing is, for all the church kids out there, like, some of y'all got to stay in Egypt, just because y'all don't even have, like, promised land ambitions or thoughts. Like, it sounds good to want to go there, but when you realize, oh, I got to go through the desert and I'm going to get hungry and I'm going to get tired, people start falling off. So I always say there's going to be people who will put a brick or two down and then they're going to move on to something else or to someone else who they feel like I can have a free ride or an easy ride, but that's okay. Like, take them 2 bricks and just keep building. Most people circle back anyways once they see, like, oh, this is taking off. Like, they'll be back and they still can't go.
I hear you there. Well, we have reached the end of the show, and of course, we have a game. It's called Speed Round. I want to give you a question. You give the best answer you can think of at the time. I got about 10 questions. Oh. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's go. Let's do it.
All right. Biggest idol growing up.
Biggest idol growing up, I'm going to have to say Beyonce.
Okay. Favorite Beyonce song?
I'd say Flawless.
Flawless. Okay. All right. Who would you want to sit down and have dinner with outside of Beyonce?
Outside of Beyonce, probably like Missy Elliott.
Okay. Yeah, definitely creative. Creative there. Creative genius. Greatest rapper alive, in your opinion?
I'd say Lil Wayne.
Lil Wayne, okay. Best memory growing up?
Playing softball.
Okay. Best old school singer of all time, in your
opinion? Whitney Houston.
Whitney Houston, okay. Best old school hip hop song of all time?
just for the sake of time, I'm gonna say Nuck If You Buck, because that just always get the crowd going. But if I had more time to think about it, I probably wouldn't choose that.
I have one, but I'll say that one. This ain't me on the hot seat. Best restaurant not many people have heard of.
Right now I've been really into this Japanese place called Token Ramen, and they sell ramen obviously in the name. I don't know if people have heard of it or not. I'm not a big foodie. Like, I eat for survival. Like, I don't eat to live. I eat for survival. So that's my little thing now, is just Token Ramen.
Okay. All right. Biggest sports memory?
Biggest sports memory? Going to the sub-state. We lost in softball, so technically we were third place in the state, but just knowing that we were that close to going to the state and had a chance to win it all was dope.
Okay, and last one. Worst movie ever?
Tyler Perry's reunion, family reunion, or no, Homecoming. Tyler Perry Homecoming. It's like one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. No disrespect, but I watched that whole movie and I was like, oh my gosh, like, this was just ridiculous. And sometimes he'll give you one that's like, okay, that's not too bad, but that one was just terrible.
I thought you might say Soul Plane, but hey, it is what it is. All right, the speed round is over. I want to thank you, Ashley, for coming on the show. Can you tell everyone where they can find you on social media, or where they can find Talented 10th, and any things that you may be working on that you can tell us, I could say.
That I can tell you. Okay, so you can find me on Instagram at HillaryBanks03. So that's Hillary with two L's, Banks03. On Facebook, I'm Ashley Autumn. And you can go to the Talented 10th website, talented10th10ent.com. And then you can also find Talented 10th on Instagram at talented10th10th. ENT, and then same thing on Facebook, and same thing on YouTube is Talented 10th TV.
Okay. All right. And of course, they got some new some rebranding going on at Talented 10th as well. Of course, if you've seen my social media, you've seen some of the new designs, which I'm like, yes, very, very excellent work, I must say.
If you go to the website and you sign up for the email list, you will be one of the first ones to start receiving some of the updates and the things that we're doing. So I'm not going to tell anybody here on the show, because I don't want to ruin it, but go to talented10thent.com, subscribe to our email list. And again, we'll be sending out emails with just little drops of things that we have going on. Like you said, we're rebranding, but with that rebranding, we have lots of goodies coming, and I'm excited to roll it out. I'm excited for people to see it, and all that type of stuff. Just lots of stuff going on. So, yeah.
All right. And of course, I'm the host of the show, Mike Patton. You can find me on Artist Formerly Known as Twitter at Mike Patton 82. That's MikePatton 82 on the Artist Formerly Known as Twitter. Of course, shouts out to Prince, by the way, with that one. Of course, you can find me on Instagram and Threads at _THA_GENERAL_MP. And of course, you can find This Woman Works on YouTube, of course. And you can also find it on all your listening platforms as well. You know, those listening platforms are Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, you name it, we are there. I want to thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this episode, the debut episode of This Woman's Work. This Woman Works. Good gracious. I'm getting that mixed up with my own. I'm getting tongue-tied over here on my own show. How about that? But, of course, stay tuned. Next week, we will have a brand new show. And, of course, I'm not going to tell you who it's going to be. You got to tune in. Thank you all for tuning in. We're out. Peace.